I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And we are still in quarantine. This is such a unique time for all of us. So we're going to talk about some quarantine things because I think we have to, you know, keep track of what's going on in our world. You know, I think a little bit later I want to talk about some of the overreaches from government. Recently, I was privileged to be on The Viewpoint this Sunday with Malcolm Out Loud. And that's one of the topics that we had discussed was government overreach during this time. Is this an opportunity for politicians or parties or groups that have desires for more control over American life to reach in and take that from you because of this quarantine and what's going on? We're seeing a battle now, back and forth, between people who want to restart the world and people are telling us, no, we should wait a little bit longer. The numbers aren't coming out exactly the same. They aren't really clear. The predicted number of deaths, though horrific that we lost so many people with this COVID-19, certainly has not materialized to the fears that we were told that really shut the country down and have damaged our economy and so many businesses. So the question that we hear out on social media is this part of a bigger plan? You know, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but I think at times people do put plans into order. So we're going to cover some of that stuff. Something I want to talk about right now is something that kind of took a backstage dive. It kind of fell off the headlines. It's been pretty quiet for a while because obviously we have a life-threatening pandemic going on. So it's obvious, but just as important to Americans as the pandemic, because that will pass and we will move on. There will be a vaccine at some point. We will get some herd immunity and we will move along. What I want to talk about is Attorney General Barr and the Mueller investigation. Now, that's kind of really taken a back seat to all this other stuff. But things are starting to percolate. And you're starting to see there's a potential that things could start coming out this summer. I think they were going to come out this summer so that they had a full opportunity to be disseminated amongst the public so we could get an understanding of what's going on. But there's some important things that have been coming out. And while I don't like to read from newspapers or anything, I do want to get a couple quotes direct. So Attorney General Barr said he believes that the Russian investigation that shadowed President Donald Trump for 2 years of his administration was started without any basis and amounted to an effort to sabotage the presidency. He said that on an interview with the Fox News Channel. That is groundbreaking. That is blockbuster. The Attorney General of the United States, who most people believe he has great credibility. Obviously, some people think he's just aligned to Trump to save Trump. We're never going to change that opinion, because what do they say? For those who believe, no evidence is necessary. For those who don't, no evidence is ever enough. So we're always going to have that kind of a split. But for the Attorney General to come out and say that based on his investigation, this was all a hoax, which we all knew, right? So Chasing Justice, all our previous episodes are on AmericaOutloud.com, and they're in all the different podcast channels and all the, you know, iHeartRadio and all that. Go back and listen to what we were talking about back in the day and how we were calling this a hoax and the reasons for it. I gave a lot of investigative reasons why I thought it was a hoax back then, and it's pretty clear that it is. So Barr, and here's how the story is written, which I think is great. He comes out and makes that comment. Now you got to remember, he's the Attorney General of the United States. He's in charge of investigating all of that. He has subpoena power. He has investigative power. He has all the records. He has the recordings, everything he would need to think about this. So he doesn't just come out and slipshod make a comment that, hey, guess what? This is what's going on. What he says is this was a travesty, basically. And here's how the reporters reported this. Barr offered no support for his assertion that the FBI lacked a basis for the opening of the investigation and made no mention of the fact that the Bureau began its probe after a Trump campaign advisor purported to have early knowledge that Russia had dirt on a Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton. All right? So what they're trying to say is, yeah, the Attorney General doesn't really know what he's talking about. He just was trying to protect Trump. That's all that's going on here. And I think it's really a sad state of affairs that this has gone on in our country, and it's kind of taken the backseat, but I'm hoping that it gets amped up. It sounds like Durham is going to have he's going to have some investigative things coming out soon, maybe some indictments, and maybe we see this move forward. I know I've been skeptical that there would actually be indictments and arrests. I think there'll be low-level people. I don't think there'll be Jim Comey and his crowd, but it's the best that we can do, I think, for the moment. So we're coming to you today in Chasing Justice from quarantine. So, you know, in quarantine, it's very difficult to find things for everyone to do. You know, we have high school kids here. We have college kids here. We have my wife and I. We have our dog, our rescue dog that we talk about, Arthur, all the time. And people are running around the house. They're running around my studio. They're coming in and out of my office. So it's really coming to you live from quarantine here. So if you hear the dog bark or anything, I want you to know that's what's going on. We're as real as we can possibly be here. So another thing that's going on with the COVID situation is we're seeing, you know, obviously we're not driving a lot. People aren't driving around. We're not in our cars. We're not using a lot of gasoline. We're not going all over the place. You're staying home. So I saw a funny thing on social media. Hey, my car is now getting 1 week to the gallon or something like that, which I thought was pretty good. But the stocks have taken another big hit. They go up and they go down, up and go down, just based on all the conversation we're hearing throughout, you know, what they're going to do. Are they going to restart the economy, not start the economy? Are we going to get back to things? Are we going to be broke? Is no one going to have money? Are we going to write checks? Whatever it is. So it's interesting to see that, you know, right now the stocks are taking a slide. And oil stocks, I don't know about you, but here in New Jersey, I saw gasoline for under under $2 a gallon for the first time in, it's got to be many years, at least 6 or 7 years since I saw gasoline under $2 a gallon. It was $1.95. I hear some places in the country have it even cheaper. Well, this is a boon to us, along with the fact that apparently they have just found a huge oil reserve of several billions of barrels. I believe it was in Alaska. I don't want to hang my hat on that, but I think it was near one of the pipelines that they're building that they found this reserve, which is fantastic. That's another bunch of billions of gallons of gasoline, which provides us with more independence, economic independence, energy independence. So the stocks are taking a hit because there was a deal that was reached recently. We had talked about this a few weeks ago, where the Russians and the Saudis are in a feud over oil, and it caused a lot of problems in the market, and gasoline started taking a dive, and now there's more gasoline than we need, and it's being produced still at a rate of 3 billion barrels a day or some astronomical number, when in reality, because of the less travel going on, we only need a billion barrels. So that means that the market is flooded, glutted with oil, and therefore the price comes down. Very basic economics. When you have more of something, it costs less. When you have less of something that people want, it costs more. So take it easy out there. If you have 401ks, if you have mutual funds, if you have a pension, if you have all that stuff, you have stocks, don't panic, okay? This is all artificial because of what's going on. Now, I'm not a financial expert. I'm not trying to guide you. What I'm trying to tell you is that stocks and the stock market and all this financial background of our lives is all based on how our economy goes. Because of the COVID situation and this unprecedented, unexpected shutdown, we now have a situation where we don't know the future. We can't see the future like we could a few months ago. We could see the economy was roaring. It was going to continue to be good, and everyone would do better and better. Now, the concern is that these businesses that are closing might not be able to come back. The government is pumping out $2 trillion of stimulus money, which is, that's a lot of money, $2 trillion. But if it doesn't get to the right places, if the right people don't get it, it may not help. I know a lot of people are going around trying to do the right thing, you know, helping their local community. So that's the reason that the stocks are going up one day and down the next, up one day and down the next. Be patient. Take it easy. Don't panic. Let's see how this thing shakes out for all of us, because eventually it's going to shake out. I think we're going to be okay in the long run because we had solid foundation for our economy. All right, we had a solid foundation going into this, and when we come out, we may have a few months to retool. People are definitely losing their jobs, but they'll be rehired back. There's a yearning for America to produce and do what we do. I think There's also a great opportunity here. With all of our knowledge now of what's going on with China, I mean, I saw a list the other day. They said they gave us tainted dog food, tainted kids' candy. Now they're giving us this virus. And the list goes on and on of faulty products and things we get from China because they're cheaper. That's why all our manufacturing went there. It's cheaper because when I want to buy a set of bowls and plates for my house, I want to spend $10. I don't want to spend $80. But they come from China, and they're $10, so I buy them. Well, if we're going to remove manufacturing from China and either bring it home or bring it to another ally, like maybe go to India, where we have a better relationship with them, or maybe we go somewhere on our own hemisphere here. We look at some of the South American countries, and we see how we can set up partnerships with them where the labor is cheaper, and therefore we can have our manufactured stuff manufactured cheaper. But I say bring it all home. Bring it all home to America, and we have to figure out the pricing situation. You know, it's one thing, and I'll be honest with you, it's one thing for me to say I want a set of plates and bowls, and I want to pay $10 for them. But if they're made in America, it's going to cost me $80. Well, Lieutenant Joe, at this age in my life, I can go buy the $80 set of bowls. I'm not happy with it. I'd rather buy the $10 set of bowls, but I can afford the $80 set of bowls. Not everyone is in this position, and I get that. I know lots and lots of people, my friends and family members, that could not buy an $80 set of bowls and plates if they wanted them. So what we have to look at is, how is this going to affect all of us by bringing all this manufacturing home? Is it going to cause us to relook at the wage structures and how much things cost? Is that going to change the economy? I think all of this is food for thought for the future, to see how this is going to look, how it's going to work out. But I think this is an opportunity for us to bring home at least our pharmaceuticals. Let's bring all them home. Let's bring home our essential manufacturing things, our safety and security stuff that we need, any type of equipment that we can make here in America. We should make it here in America. That gives everybody more jobs, more opportunity. But then we have to be smart about how we work the system after that, because like I said, we can't make everything so expensive just because it's made here, because our people are used to and deserve higher wages. That's just part of our country. We have minimum wage laws, and minimum wage is really for beginners. It's really not for, you know, I couldn't raise a family on minimum wage. It would be extremely difficult. So we have to get people 2 and 3 times beyond minimum wage so that they can make a life for themselves. So that's going to have a cost with it, right? But if we have lower energy costs, because we have our own gasoline production and natural gas production and all of those kind of things, that can lower the cost of some things. Then we figure out how to set the wages at a certain ways that we can manufacture and still make a profit, and people can make money, and we can still have a reasonable priced item. So I think that's important, and I wanted to get into that a little bit. So don't be afraid with the stocks. Let this all shake out. Let's see how it's going to go, and then we'll decide from there what changes we have to make. So don't panic, everybody, please. All right, so when we're talking about quarantine, and I wanted to get into this a little bit. Like I said, I was on Viewpoint, and if you have a chance, go back to the podcast and listen to the Viewpoint shows. They're all excellent. They're on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and again at 6 p.m., I believe. And then they run on the on the podcasts all over the place. Malcolm is a great host. His guests are really excellent. Not because I was on there, but the other people that are on there are really magnificent. So go listen to that show. But if you go back and you listen, you'll see one of the things we did talk about was, is there an overreach by government? Is this an opportunity for people to now do things they couldn't do before? I think I find it interesting that we do see, you know, all of these left-wing governors decided, okay, we're having this crisis, no more gun sales, shut the gun places down. But they left the abortion centers open, all right? So you say immediately, people can't protect themselves, but we can still go and have abortions. Now, Lieutenant Joe is a reasonable kind of guy. I've always tried to be reasonable. What I have to say, as much as I don't like to make this argument, I have to make this argument. If abortion is still legal in our country, and it is, it is the law of the land. So therefore, it is a procedure that people currently have the right to attain for themselves, and it is a medical procedure. And there is a timeline involved. I mean, if you have someone who is in that timeline when they're going to get an abortion in the first trimester, And now all of a sudden everything's shut down for this thing for 3 months, and that pushes them into the second trimester. You have really affected their ability to make decisions about their procedures. Now, we can talk about the procedure. We can say whether we think it's appropriate to do. I've always said a woman has a right to her body. A woman has a right to make her decisions about her body. My concern is always once there's a baby, there's another person there. Who speaks up for the baby? That's all I'm trying to say. Who speaks up for that baby? And yes, it is a baby. Okay. One of the things I'm hoping comes out of this COVID crisis is that we start to look at things more clearly. We stop with all the political correctness nonsense. We stop pretending things that are not real. And we start looking at things correctly. Like one of them being, yes, abortion currently is legal. Half the country does not like it. Half the country wants it. The reality is it's ending a baby's life. Whether you believe in that or not, because it makes you more comfortable with being pro-abortion, the reality is it's a baby and you're ending its life. We have to be clear on that. And if the country chooses that's what they're going to do, I'll pray for them and I'll pray that there's less abortions and that the babies are protected. But we have to keep in mind at all times, let's be clear on what's going on. The president wanted to have the borders shut down so we can control our immigration, so we can control who's coming into our country. And everyone, oh, he's a racist. Everybody who wants that is racist. But at the same time, these are the same people that say you cannot have voter ID. Now they want to do mail-in voting. What could go wrong there? Do you see? All these things are pretend. We're going to have mail-in votes now for our elections, which can easily be manipulated. How many times have we heard after an election, the guy that was running the election found 30,000 votes in the trunk of his car that he forgot were there. How many times do you think that's going to happen, especially in 2020, during the Trump re-election campaign? You don't think our friends on the left might find thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of ballots in the key states that they just forgot? How are we going to document who these people were that mailed in all these ballots? Who's going to count them, right? It is prone to fraud. Now listen, if President Trump doesn't win re-election because the country decides they want someone else, well, that's fair and square. That's the way it goes. I accept that. But if it's fraud, then that's not right for any of us, whether you vote for him or not. So the reality is this mail-in voting thing is kind of absurd when you put it next to the fact that we say, anywhere you go, you need an ID. You can't get on an airplane without an ID. You can't go anywhere without an ID. But I can come in and vote, one of the most sacred things in our country. You can vote without an ID, so that's prone to fraud. And then people jump up and down and say, no, it's people don't have IDs. They can't get it. They're not smart enough to get it. They don't know where to get it. They don't leave their house. How are they supposed to vote? It's not fair. You want to keep them from voting. No, not at all. Everyone can get an ID today. Everyone can be registered to vote properly and go out and vote, right? So having an ID for voters makes a lot of common sense now, doesn't it? Because now we know we have lots of people voting that are not American citizens. And that changes your vote. It changes the whole dynamic of voting. So there's a lot of things we need to think about more clearly. Now, I think we're going to try and get back to this. I have so many things in my pages of outrages today. I'll be back with round two of Chasing Justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, welcome back to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I want to get back to my pages of outrages. We were talking a little bit about extreme measures by government, and I was telling you that I was on Viewpoint. Go back and listen. You can hear the show. It was really excellent. But it gave me an idea to really look into that a little further and see some of the abuses or potential abuses that are going on. So I'm looking at Kentucky here. All right, Governor Andy Beshear. He warned that anyone attending a church service would have to quarantine for an additional 14 days. Knowing that everyone might not adhere to his warning, he ordered police to go through the church parking lots and write down the license plate numbers of the attendees. Police will then provide the information to health departments who will enforce quarantines. I think that's stepping over the line, ladies and gentlemen. That's going a little far. Now we're using our police to surveil our citizens for potentially what we're talking about is our First Amendment right to peaceably assemble. Now, I have said before on other shows and in articles that I understand the health needs, right? The health needs for of a health concern that we have to take some extraordinary measures. And sometimes it's in the interest to say, hey, we're going to shut down the subway or we're going to shut down the airplanes for whatever reason, if it's health related. We have to get a handle on this. This COVID is one of those situations. So I get that. Telling us to, you know, do this. And everyone's cooperating. For the most part, everybody's cooperating, doing the right thing. When it comes to church, and I understand that's a gathering place. Everyone's going to gather there in church. You're close to each other. You're way closer than 6 feet. You could certainly spread the virus around, which keeps it going, gets more people infected. And the reality is, out of some of those people who are infected, some of them will die. Now, in lots of churches and houses of worship, when you go there, you look around, you see most of the people there are older, which means older people are at risk yet again, all right, for this particular thing. But at the same time, having this governor come out and say that he's going to send the police through to take down license plates, you know, that's a surveillance job is what they're doing. They're gathering that information, giving it to the health department to go and quarantine. How are you going to keep them in a house? Are we going to get to the point? What are they going to do? Park a police car on your street and you're not to leave your house? Maybe we'll wiretap you and we'll listen to see if you're making plans to go to the park or maybe you're making plans to go out to your friend's house, right? We should all follow the rules. The rules are guidelines, right? We should follow those guidelines for our own health, for the health of our neighbors and our community. You know, our older people, our younger people. That's the smart thing to do. It is. As difficult as it is. But at the same time, having government enforce this, I think that's a little difficult. So Senator Rand Paul, he basically told Governor Beshear, you know, you better take a step back here for threatening mandatory quarantine. Isn't that house arrest, really? Mandatory quarantine is house arrest. So now I've decided you went to church, you violated the guidelines that we have, or the governor's edict, or whatever you want to call it, wherever you live. And because of that, you are now forcefully quarantined to your home for 14 days. Well, that has to be enforced. And what if everybody in my block went to church? How are they going to keep 200 of us in our house for sure? See, so it kind of loses its teeth. And the reality is, once the genuine authority is shown to really not have any power, then anything they say or do is really voluntary. You know, you could take it or it's a suggestion. So then people were going to say, you know what? They couldn't take those church people together. If we all start having barbecues on the weekend again, we decide we're going to start the country up. There's nothing they can do about it, really. What are they going to do, come and get us all? Well, some of these people have make it sound like, yeah, they would come and get you, you know, which is a danger. So I think we do need to think of this for the future. This is such an unprecedented situation, but I think it is extremely dangerous that this happened, this virus. I don't know enough about it. I'm not a virologist, but I'm looking at the numbers and I'm saying how many thousands of people have died already from the regular flu, which, you know, something people, everybody keep jumping back to. How many people have died from the regular flu? But we don't shut the world down. We don't stop the economy because every year there's, 30,000 to 80,000 people in America die, mostly older people and younger people. And we don't shut the world down because the flu season comes. What I think I heard in all of these statistics was that with the regular flu, and my number's not exact, so if you're a doctor, you're someone listening to me, I'm trying to give impressions of what I see, is that 0.1% of the people who get regular flu will die, but 1% of people who get COVID-19 will die. that's a huge difference. That's 0.9 of a point more, which is a lot more people could potentially die from the COVID than they would of the regular flu, even though it's so much more in the population, the regular flu, than this COVID. We're trying to prevent it from having that same grip on the whole country. And that's what this is about. So I kind of get it. I don't like the overstep when they start to threaten me with quarantine, that they're gonna enforce my quarantine. Well, how are you going to do that? Or maybe they'll lock us all up and put us in jail. You know, because there's plenty of space in the jail, because they want to let all the criminals out that are in there for violating the law and endangering us. They want to let them out so that they don't get sick, but they're going to put me, because I wanted to go to the park with my kids, they're going to put me in jail. Or I want to go to church and pray to my God, and they're going to put me in jail, because that's the only way they can control me. Otherwise, they have to control all of us, right? It's something to think about. For the next time, what are we doing here? What strengths and powers do we want to give government? You know, A.G. Barr, we were talking about him before. He came out the other day and he said, hey, listen, state and local governors have lots of power to make all these kind of rules. Well, and there's two things about that. First, it's refreshing to hear the federal government say state and local have all these powers, because normally the feds want to take away everything and they want to dictate everything. So it's nice to hear them state and local can make their decisions. But at the same time, it sounds like the AG's kind of giving the okie-dokie to all of these people that want to say, we'll lock you up, we'll do this, we'll do that to you, we'll shut your gun stores down, you can't do what... You know, we need to consider this very, very carefully. All right, so that was in Kentucky. There's other places. In Mississippi, they got so far as to, you know, ticket people who attend a church or drive-in. I thought this was a really cool idea. I saw a picture of it. You can't go into church, right? Because you'll be 6 feet close to each other. Everybody be on top of each other, so that's not safe. But if everybody pulled up out in the parking lot, rolled down their windows, and the priest got out there on a speaker system or a bullhorn or something and did the service, or the drive-by, like I saw drive-by confessions at a Catholic church, drive-by blessings at another church, what's wrong with that? You know, it's our right to express ourselves in our religion. We went over this a couple shows ago, right? A free nation, what's the value of free speech? And part of that is expressing our relationship with God. So I understand that having us on top of each other is not good, but what's wrong with the drive-up service? We all drive, we're 6 feet apart. The only people in my car is my family, who I'm already less than 6 feet away from, right? So we're already in the same house together. And we're there and we have our church service. I would say that's a great alternative to saying, no church, no church. You got to do it outside, do it in a speaker system. Maybe go to a drive-in theater, and the priest can go up there, and everyone can put the little booth in their car, or you can do it, you know, on a radio station. The priest can go on a local radio station and do the mass, and everybody tunes into the car in the parking lot. Wouldn't that be cool? I think that would be cool. That'd be a cool way to do this. But to give everybody tickets, we're going to charge you. You have to pay money. What? Pay money? Wait a minute. I thought this was about keeping everybody safe. Now they're going to charge you money. You're going to get a ticket. Well, we know that most enforcement of laws and regulations and whatnot have, the reason that they have a penalty attached is so that you don't do it. You know, it's the carrot and the stick. If you break the law, you do a burglary, you go to jail. You don't want to go to jail, so you don't do a burglary. You know, you don't drive in excess of the speed limit because you don't want to get a ticket that costs you money. So therefore, you drive within the speed limit. So I get the idea. They don't want us to assemble, so they're going to give you a ticket. It's going to cost you money. But the other side of that is that government constantly looks for ways to pull money out of your pocket that is not in a tax. This way, the local mayor, governor, whatever he is or she is, can't say, well, you raised the taxes on everybody. Yeah, I don't want to say that. That doesn't sound good. But I want more of their money. So you know what? We'll add regulations. In New Jersey, they doubled or tripled the yearly registration of your car. Right, you got to pay every year for the car registration. Well, they doubled or tripled the fee. This way, it's a fee. It's not a tax. It's just a fee. So all these fees went up. Astronomical numbers. That's why it's so expensive to live in New Jersey. Because it's a very liberal government, and they're constantly taken out of our pockets. So I'm getting a little far afield here. But my point is that government will often use these things as a way to do things they couldn't do. How many legislatures in this, including our own federal Congress, gave themselves a raise in the middle of the stimulus bill? Hey, this is a good chance. This is going to go through. Everybody's going to vote for this. So let's just throw our raise right in there, right? That's where Nancy Pelosi wanted money, $25 million for some for the symphony or some nonsense that her daughter-in-law or somebody is involved with, right? It looks bad, but hey, just throw it in the bill. Excuse me. It's not corona. It's just that when I talk a lot, my mouth gets dry. So government will overstep if it's given an opportunity. In North Carolina, in the Outer Banks, you know, it's a beautiful area of North Carolina. If you've never been, a lot of summer homes there, a lot of beautiful stuff. They were going to block people from accessing their vacation homes. They don't want you going there if you don't live in that state and you're not living in that house right now. They don't want you going there. So therefore, they were going to block access to your private property. Now they're depriving you of your private property. Don't we have laws and rules and constitutional safeguards so people cannot keep you from your private property? But under this banner of public safety, they're going to extend it and say, we don't want you here. Now, I am not going to say whether their motive there is good or bad. If I have a community that's basically safe and people are coming from areas that are highly affected by this virus or this illness, I probably don't want them coming here either. The difference is, vacationers, you can tell, you can't come here. You can't rent the house. You can't come here now. You can come in the summer, but not now. We're keeping our population safe. If I own a home there, that's the only thing I should be able to say. I own a home there, and I'm going there, and they should open the roadblock and let me through. It's my private property. I'm actually a resident, at one point or another, of North Carolina if I own a home there. So these are all the kind of things that there's going to be lawsuits when this is all over. Lawsuits are already starting, I'm sure. You know, people who were ticketed or stopped or couldn't do whatever. There's going to be a lot of lawsuits, which is going to be, it's going to work its way through the court. It's going to take years for this to work its way through the court before the Supreme Court will be coming up with, cases that will dictate how these kind of things will be handled in the future. Because for sure, there will be COVID-20, and there'll be COVID-21, and there'll be some other disease, that'll come and get us. And there's going to be a concern that we should do this every time. And we just can't keep doing this. I mean, we can't just keep shutting our country down. But again, at the same time, we all don't want to die, do we? We don't want to really walk around in the zombie apocalypse. We don't want that to happen. So it's interesting how we're trying to do this. So be careful out there. Watch what your local government is doing. Now, I mentioned that they're releasing prisoners in lots of places. Okay. So let's talk about that for a second. We know, and most of us who are on the right, more conservative, genuinely believe, that our friends on the left want to allow illegal immigration into the country because they know eventually people are going to be voting, and once they're here, we're not going to have the guts to remove anybody. No one's going to do it. So therefore, all those people that come here will be given amnesty, and millions of people will now be new voters, and most of them will vote for the Democrats. You know, the people who will tell you they're going to take care of you and give you things, and the other people hate you. They hate. They want to kill you. They want to kill your family. They want to put you in prison, but not us. We're going to give you money and food. We love you. We want you to come here, right? So who are people going to vote for, right? That's exactly what we all believe, that that's really the root of this whole illegal immigration thing. But releasing prisoners. Now, there's been a big push for prison reform. President Trump has been a proponent of prison reform. I myself have spoken clearly on this, that I think we do need some prison reform. Not because we shouldn't be held to account if you break certain rules and laws, but the reality is putting people in prison, for how long you put them in prison. If it's a violent crime, if you took someone's life, you should either forfeit your own life and be executed. I'm a death penalty believer. Or you should be in prison when that person you killed gets to get up out of the grave and rejoin their family. That's when you can get out of prison. All right? You forfeit your life by doing that. Now, that's a pretty big penalty. As it is right now, in most places, it's 30 years to life if you do a homicide, a murder, a wanton murder where you purposely kill someone. But you don't usually do the 30 years. If you behave yourself in jail, you might get out in 22 years or 23. Now, that sounds like, right? Could you imagine that for you and me? You're going to go do 22 years in prison. Horrific. But if you're a young person, you kill somebody when you're 21 or 22, you get out when you're 44, you have a whole life ahead of you. What does that person you killed have? They're dead and gone forever. Their family is deprived of them. So, here in quarantine, Lieutenant Joe sometimes has a tendency to go a little bit in circles. I connect all these things in my head and I try and explain them to you. But the whole idea was that releasing these prisoners has been a goal of our friends on the left. They want to let them vote from jail. Now, one of the things we knew, one of the penalties for being a felon, for committing a crime against the rest of us, against society, was not only did you go to jail, maybe you got a ridiculously high fine, but at the same time, you lost your right to vote, which is one of the most precious things anyone can ever have, is the right to determine their own future by voting. So that was a huge penalty for being a felon. So don't be a felon, and that doesn't happen to you, right? That's the idea. You connect the dots there? Okay. So our friends on the left have thought, let's let in illegal immigration, they'll vote for us, and let's let the prisoners vote, because most of them are going to vote for what we want, right? We're giving stuff away, we're going to let them out of jail, we want to get rid of these mandatory sentences. The victims are actually the ones who were bad, not the criminals. The criminals were forced into it by people that hate, the people that does this, and people that that, and billionaires made them do that. You know, it all comes down to the same tired old arguments we have constantly. But our friends on the left want the prisoners out. And this is a convenient excuse to empty the prisons out, the jails out, and let everyone out. Now, there's already stories starting to emerge of people who have been released from prison or from jail because of the coronavirus that have already committed additional crimes. So, as a lot of people are prone to say, when a politician makes a decision, like President Trump, when he decides to start the economy again, you know one of the arguments is going to be the very first time someone dies of corona, after he reopens the economy, they're going to say he has blood on his hands, he's responsible for that death, he should have kept us shut down for another 6 months. Which would serve their purpose, right? Would destroy the economy further, more people vote to the left. But that's okay. That's their plan. We get the plan. But the thing is, they would say he has blood on his hands. So if you're releasing prisoners, and one of those prisoners comes out and rapes somebody, who's got part of that responsibility for that victim that got raped? How about the people who let the criminal out of jail, who was already in jail for being a criminal? Now they came out and did more crime. Who's got that blood on their hands, right? What if you come out and you murder somebody? There's someone who's dead who would not have been dead had this person not gotten out of jail. So we're looking at this and we're saying, this is good for the prisoners. And again, I have spoken in favor of prison reform for certain things. Some people should not be in jail for some of the things that go on. There's other alternatives we can find to help correct their behavior so they don't hurt the rest of us and whatever. But violent crime, you got to go to jail. When they let these guys and girls out, they're doing it because they're saying the jail is going to be a hotbed of coronavirus, and these people are potentially going to die when their sentence was 10 years, not death. Okay? Is there an argument to be made there? Yeah, I guess you could make it a little bit of an argument. You got sentenced to 10 years for burglary. Now you were stuck in jail. The jail was filled with corona, and now you died. Right? So now it cost you your life. Well, I don't think we can follow that kind of logic all the way down, because we're letting these prisoners out early to protect them. But what about us? When you let all these criminals out into the world, many of them, and if you can look at the statistics of recidivism, it's more than half come out and re-victimize people, recommit crimes, end up back in jail. So right now you're going to let out all of these prisoners. You're going to have, say, 30%. Say you have 30% recidivism. Is that worth it to the rest of the population who's innocent, who didn't commit a crime? I don't know. We have a lot to think about once we turn the world back on. This is Lieutenant Joe with Chasing Justice. I'll be back in a minute with round three.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice with your host, Lieutenant Joe here, your humble host, just trying to make sense out of the world that's going on and enjoy my time with you. Hey, listen, you know that I do safety and security stuff. Well, I want to put this out there because I have some concerns about what happens when the world comes back on. I have concerns about safety and security for all of us once everyone gets back to school and gets back to work and everything starts to go together. So right now I am creating, I'm working with Campus Safety Magazine as one of the companies that I write for. I'm on their experts panel for school safety and security. And I came up with this concept is that, here's my concern, I'll lay it out for you. Once we move on and we start to go back to school, we start to go back to work, maybe school might not be this summer, maybe school is in the fall, some places might go back in the spring, I don't know. But no matter what, after this trauma that we're all experiencing, and this is a trauma, all right, started out, you know, day one or two, you looked on social media, there was a lot of jokes about quarantine, and, you know, there's still a lot of funny stuff out there. But it's like everything else. It goes through phases. This is going to continue on for at least another couple of weeks. I believe in New Jersey here, we're at least until May 1st before we're out of quarantine. I know the president wants us to get going, you know, for May 1st. Let's go. And I'm on board for that as long as it's healthy and righteous. But we're here for another couple, 3 weeks. So this has been dragging on for most of March, April, and some places, you know, if the things spike up. In other parts of the country, like New Jersey, starting to level. New York is actually starting to level because it's been out there so long. New Jersey's a couple weeks behind New York. I don't know. Is Montana that 3 weeks ahead? And, you know, they're not going to be ready to go until June? I don't know. Depends on the outbreak and how well we've all followed the rules and the guidelines and stayed away from each other to let this thing die out. But the reality is that my concern is the anxiety of this lockdown, of this shutdown, of people losing their jobs and the uncertainty of all of it. The kids who have to go back to school now with this heightened level of anxiety, is that going to change their tolerance for other kids? Are you going to find there's always a group within our society, whether kids or adults, that have a tendency towards violence? These are our active shooters, whether they're kids or adults in our workplaces. There are a certain percentage of people who could fall into that category and could attack us and hurt us. Okay? Now we come out of this major national, worldwide trauma of the COVID-19 and the shutdown and all of the difficulty that goes with it. And now we're going to push everybody right back into school. So my concerns are there school people, school kids, teachers, other workers in every other part of our economy that are going to go back to work with this heightened anxiety? Will this bring out a latent tendency of violence on their part where they may not have the tolerance they had before and they strike out? Or maybe this period of isolation has pushed people over the edge where they want to go back and they want to do something bad. I'm not saying that's happening. I am praying to God that that doesn't happen. But how foolish would it be for us not to consider that? We have to consider it and figure out a couple of things. Is there anything we can look for signs and symptoms of people who might be potentially violent, who might not have been violent before the shutdown? I think that's a reasonable thing to consider and to think about. So I'm putting this article together. I'm working with some psychologists that have expertise in violence to see if we can put together a checklist of things we should be looking for, our schools should be looking for in our student population, our workplaces should look for behaviors or comments and things that people say when they come back to work that could be indicators, pre-attack indicators of potential violence so that we can intervene before people get hurt. Because this trauma causes lots of problems. It could cause someone who might have been violent to now be totally introverted, and that would be a good thing if they wouldn't attack us. But there's probably a lot of other people who were on the cusp, who never acted out, who may now act out once the world comes back on and this stress is released, because it's not going to go away. The stress is going to be on us because we're going to be worrying about a reverb, or what do they call it, a bounce back, a second round of people getting sick once we get out. We know the political recriminations and the fear from the media is not going to go away. They're going to pound on this relentlessly right through the election, right through going back to school, right through going back to college, right through going back to work. It's going to be something they're going to push and hammer on very, very hard with an effort to destabilize the Trump administration. That's what they're going to do. And that's what everyone's going to be feeding into. That's what the kids are going to hear. That's what the parents are going to hear. What about anxiety in the parents that now feeds down to the kids? Maybe people lost their jobs. They might lose their houses after all of this. You know, people are getting a $1,200 stimulus check. Okay? Now, $1,200 for some people is a ton of money. Right? $1,200 is a ton of money for a lot of people that I know. For some other people, $1,200 is really not a lot of money. It's not going to make any difference in their life. Okay? But look how people are. I see them on social media. They can't wait to get that $1,200 check. They need that $1,200 check to survive. That is a lot of stress. When you add having to take care of a family and worry about the future, maybe you lost your business and all your savings went into that business. This is the stressors that I am concerned are going to rear their heads when we all come back together. We need to be prepared for it. We need to think about it ahead of time. We need to consider, how can we identify people who might have a problem? How do we help them through this? We should be working on this now. Because if we do go back to life on May 1st, we're only talking a couple of weeks, right? Can we put this together in a couple of weeks? Or are we going to have to deal with some ugly things that happen when we start going back? What if people are so stressed out where they used to tolerate somebody saying something to them on the street, but they're not going to tolerate it anymore, and they strike out? All right, so these are all real concerns that I have, and this is a project that I'm working on now, like I said, with Campus Safety Magazine, for a white paper I'm going to write and put it out there. I think it's important. I'm working with some psychologists, and I'll tell you more about it. I'm probably going to get something up on the AmericaOutloud.com platform once I get this all together, because I think it's important for you, everybody out there in America Out Loud and Chasing Justice Land, to consider this and think about it. So I'll probably have something up sooner rather than later on my concerns and the things I think we can start to do. The bigger paper and bigger project will come out probably in the summertime, so that there's time to work on it, you know, for everybody to work on it before September comes. Because I think I'm going to guess that that's probably where we're going with schools is September. So that would be a good thing to have everything in place. All right, so there you go. There's some of my thinking. That's some of Lieutenant Joe's thinking. That's a project I'm working on. I'm trying to get out in front of this. I haven't seen anybody else talking about it, so I'm talking about it. I'm trying to lead the way here and do what I can to try and help our society, right? That's what I do now. All right, so let's see. I have something else here. Charlie Kirk, who is a commentator out there in the world, he tweeted something about our response to this, our national response to the crisis and the COVID situation and the economy crashing and people losing their jobs and being all upset. I think it kind of fits dovetails, just what I was just talking about. So Charlie Kirk tweets out, and this is a paraphrase of his tweet. Hey, 17 million Americans lost their jobs last week. And our friends on the left, our Democratic friends on the left, here's their response. Let's give money to illegal aliens, right? Like our country just has billions and billions we don't need. Let's just keep printing it. Let's give some to illegal aliens. Let's release prisoners from jail. Let's start another investigation of President Trump. That's a good thing to do in the middle of this. Let's start that up and see if we can attack him some more. And on top of everything else, all these small businesses that are the heartbeat of the American economy sitting around trying to figure out how they're going to survive, let's deny them the loans, right? Because our friends on the left voted no on the loans because they wanted more perks put in there for things they wanted. They wanted to control things. They want mail-in voting. They want all this other nonsense, right? So I thought that was a brilliant tweet by Charlie Kirk, and I'm giving him that credit. It doesn't look like our friends on the left are doing a lot to help us. And I'll tell you right now, when the world comes back, if they don't jump in to help, right, if they don't jump in to help, they are really going to cause the problem to grow and be much worse than it otherwise would be. You know, at the end of this show, you know, I have a tagline I throw out there, you know, be part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Well, that's exactly what anyone out there, even you, my Democrat friends who I know who are listening into my show, my friends and family that listen in that are on the left, no matter how much you hate this president, no matter how much you despise his tweets, you despise his yellow hair, you despise everything about him, this is the man that's leading us through this. If we all don't jump on board and try and do the right thing and help him get this done, all of us are going to suffer. Our families are going to suffer because there's nobody in the wings to save us. Joe Biden is not going to save us from this terrible economy. If anything, he would make it worse. So Trump is all we got right now, and he's got a proven record of winning. He's got a proven record of making the right decisions, right? You can argue with every little thing he says and does, but the fact is the economy was roaring, our country was coming back, we were stronger, better than ever. You can't deny those things. He's our only hope right now. He's the guy. So when he comes back, don't be a part of the problem, be a part of the solution. Jump on board, figure out ways that we can work together to make this all work. You know, you can start hating him again once the economy comes back and our jobs come back and people can feed themselves again. Right? Then you can do all the hating you want to do. Right? But in the meantime, we should find a way to work together to do the right thing. Right? Another thing that came up. You know, America is the most generous place on the planet. We take care of people. We rebuild our enemies after they attack us and kill us and cause us pain and treasure and blood. We go back and rebuild them. Remember World War II? We went back and rebuilt the whole world, right? We did all that good stuff. Well, right now, one of our biggest enemies and the greatest state supporter of terrorism, you remember terrorism? That's in the background, right? We haven't had a big terrorist attack in a while, you know? Although we see the president out there through intermediaries also saying, hey, anybody that's thinking of doing something to America because you think we're weak right now, you better back off because the response will be unbelievable, and it should be. People will take advantage, especially bad people will take advantage. So, the Iranians are apparently suffering pretty bad from this COVID. They could probably use some help. They're under sanction from our government. Trump has sanctioned them pretty hard for their evil behavior, for their support of Hamas, a terrorist organization that will kill you and your family in a blink of an eye if it serves their purpose. The Iranians who took our military boat hostage and put our people on their hands and knees with their hands behind their heads. Remember that picture? Yeah, these are the guys and girls over there that are doing that to us. And now they're having a hard way. So we see all our friends on the left who seem to always move to our enemy's side. Right? The Chinese are 100% right. They're doing everything right. And Trump is all wrong. Now they're looking at Iran. Iran needs those sanctions lifted. You got to lift them so they can save those people. They always use our goodness and decency against us as a tool to push us to do things that they want to get done. Now, I'm not saying that our friends on the left are evil. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is one of their guiding principles, if you listen, is that you never let a good crisis go to waste. So here's a crisis. Let's close the gun shops. Here's a crisis. Let's control where people go. Here's a crisis. Let's give ourselves raises that we want. Here's a crisis. Let's get this the tariffs off of the Iranians, right? The sanctions. It's a good crisis. They're not going to let it go to waste. They're taking it. It's Trump's fault. Let's start a commission to go after him. You see what I'm saying? See the pattern? This is not easy. This is not hard to figure out. This is easy to figure out if you just open your eyes and look, whether you like the guy or not. You can see what's going on here. So they're demanding now that we lift these sanctions and let the Iranians have their money and their stuff so that they can take care of their people. Two questions here for you. Number one, if the Iranians have these sanctions lifted, which results in billions of dollars flowing into their coffers, are they going to take care of the health needs of their people? All of a sudden, they're going to worry about the needs of their people. You think that's going to happen? Or number two, they're not going to use any of this money for terrorism. Like, you remember the $150 billion that President Obama sent in cash on a pallet in the middle of the night? $150 billion. We know some of that went to weapons for Hamas that attacked and did terrorist attacks in different parts of the world, right? So we know what they're going to do. So now our friends are demanding that we release these sanctions so that the Iranians can take care of their people. No concessions on their part, just that we undo the only control we have to control their behavior. We should undo that. Well, do we allow our decency to circumvent our own self-interest yet again? So here's what I'm going to suggest. Instead of having to bend over backwards to prove we're good and decent people by letting our enemies flourish again, you know, letting this crisis, you know, not go to waste, what if we were to say, listen, the Iranians, medical, You need money for medical, you need money for food, you need money to help your people. We, the American people who help everybody, will help you too. But here's what you're going to do. You're immediately going to shut down all your nuclear program, and you're going to open it up to inspectors that'll come anywhere they want, anytime they want, and show up and make sure you're doing the right thing, because you lie all the time. We know they're lying. They're still running a program now. So you know, nukes. Any American prisoners or foreign prisoners that you're holding there on political nonsense, they are released immediately. Immediately, by the end of the sentence, they're on the way out the door of the prisons. You're going to release all of them. No nukes, no prisoners. You're going to renounce terrorism once and for all, and you're going to pull in your support for Hamas. You're going to remove that support for Hamas completely. Cut them off. Then we're going to come and help you. Now, what's wrong with that? Why does demanding an enemy stop doing enemy things if they want our help sound so outrageous? You can't make those demands of them. What, I can't demand that they renounce terrorism and stop an organization that kills innocent people all over the place? I can't demand that? That makes me the bad guy? Right? I can't demand that they don't have a nuclear program that they will use against Israel and their neighbors and probably against us if they could? I shouldn't demand that now? I shouldn't demand that they open their door? Why would they let people in there? Well, they're not supposed to have this program. Right? They've agreed they don't want the program, so now you're going to prove it. You want something from us? Then you have to give something. You have to give something. The bad guys have to give something. Not the good guys. The bad guys give up things. They give up their evil plans. They give up their terrorism. They give up all of their nonsense. And then we're going to do the decent thing that we do for the rest of the decent world. We'll come in and help you. Doesn't that make perfect sense? I think it does. And anybody who wants to argue the other way, that they shouldn't have to do any of that, you really need to say to yourself, well, if it wasn't for needing help with this coronavirus and people being sick, wouldn't I want them to not have a nuclear program? Wouldn't I want them not to support terrorism around the world and kill innocent people? Wouldn't I want them to let these American political prisoners go? Of course you would. So why does it sound so difficult when it's put in context of a quid pro quo? You want something from us? We want something from you. We're willing to help, but you got to do things as well. Okay? So we covered everything I wanted to talk about, except for this, Fire Fauci tweet that went out there. There was a tweet, Fire Fauci, because he caused all these problems. And he's really not a supporter of the president. I think we need to look at him in the coming days and weeks and see if Mr. Fauci is really the best for this crisis, because he's been kind of wrong all along. Dr. Brick seems to be, she's pretty good, but this guy seems to be wrong on every count, and he's considered the expert because he attacks Trump. You see? So therefore, everybody loves him. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another fantastic episode being here with you. Stay strong, be brave, have hope, say a prayer for our country. Let's look forward. We're going to get better. We're going to heal. We're going to be a greater place again. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.